Good morning. We thank you for tuning in to our radio program today. This program is brought to you each Sunday morning by the Parkway Church of Christ here in Bowling Green. We do hope today that you will take a Bible if you have an opportunity to do so. Follow along with us as we go through Bible passages relating to our topic. This, of course, is our custom, and this is our responsibility, because our responsibility is to speak as the oracles of God when we presume to speak on behalf of God. That is, if we're going to talk about things that God has spoken about, then we need to use His words. We need to appeal to His will, and that is expressed through His word. So that's what we will do, the Lord willing, today. Now, being a human and being capable of forgetting things and being capable of making mistakes and errors, we encourage you to be sure and examine the things that we have to say. Do like the Bereans of that we read about in the book of Acts in chapter 17 and verse 11, whose nobility is acknowledged because they received the word of God, but also searched the scriptures daily whether those things were so. So we encourage you to do that, and don't be afraid in any way. I will welcome any input from you, but be sure and don't be afraid of letting us know when and where you think we have made a mistake and erred from the scripture. Last week we were talking about, and it's sort of more of an attitude, more of an approach to things, religious things, but it's represented, it comes up under the question that people sometimes raise: what difference does it make? And I did a program on that week last week, and we looked at some Old Testament examples last week. But I want us to continue with that today, because there's just more to talk about on it. We looked at examples that I think people are very familiar with. We talked about Nadab and Abihu in Leviticus chapter 12. We talked about Saul offering the sacrifice in 1 Samuel chapter 13 when he was not authorized to do that. Samuel rebuked him for what he had done in offering the burnt offering sacrifice. We talked about the example of Saul again in chapter 15 in 1 Samuel. We talked about some examples where people, Uzzah and the carrying of the ark and the touching of the ark when the oxen stumbled and all of that. And we talked about examples where it would be understandable, given how many people think today and what you hear them say, for someone to say, well, what difference does it make how that was done anyway? What difference did it make where they got the fire to offer the incense in Leviticus 10? What difference did it make whether or not they put the ark that the Ten Commandments were housed in on a cart rather than carrying it with the poles as instructed in Exodus 25. And that question is a legitimate question. People ask that today. What difference does it make? And so I want to continue with that line of thought, and we're explaining what difference it does make, why it does make a difference. The difference is whether or not God has authorized it. We saw the consequences for people who may have thought that in those examples we looked at. At least their conduct is reflective of that mentality of what difference does it make. Nadab and Abihu, certainly. Uzzah, certainly. Saul just pretty much admitted that. That's pretty much stated that that's how he felt about it, and people say it today. There are a couple more examples I want us to look at. In the Old Testament, there's an interesting story of a very powerful king. King Uzziah. We talked about Uzzah already in the ox cart, but this is Uzziah. You need to add an I to the name. And you have this king who was favored by God, who started out doing what was right in the sight of God. He was only 16 years old when he began to reign. This is all in 2 Chronicles 26, if you're interested in reading all of that later. King of Judah. And he had sort of a knack for military advancement, military things. And you begin to read of the great list of things, along with his farming endeavors, crop growing and all of that, making sure they had plenty of water, had many cisterns, we read about in verse 10. And then comes the description of the military. He had 2,600 men of valor. He had 307,500 men of war, and it says who could make war with mighty power. Make war with mighty power. And they were well equipped. You know, we sometimes talk about that's been, in fact, that was one of the platform of the of Donald Trump, and he talked about well supplying the military. And that's appreciated because people want to be protected. And it says, Uzziah prepared for all of the army shields, spears, helmets, coats of mail, bows and stones for slinging. And then something interesting here, and I don't know if we read about this anywhere in the Old Testament. I'm talking about military power. He made machines, catapults, invented by skillful men to be on the towers and on the corners to shoot arrows and great stones. And his fame spread abroad, for he was marvelously helped till he was strong. And you know, this reminds us a little bit of the old lesson, what we're about to read here. The old expression, pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall, in the book of Proverbs. And I'm afraid we're about to see that right here, because the next verse, 2 Chronicles 26 and verse 16 says, but when he was strong, he grew proud. So what happens here is God had helped him, and the problem is that he starts to think like Nebuchadnezzar of Daniel's day. He begins to think like that. You know, is this kingdom not the result of my power, my wisdom? That's how Nebuchadnezzar started thinking, and he was punished for that. But notice what Uzziah did as a result of his pride. It says, for he was unfaithful to the Lord his God, and entered the temple of the Lord to burn incense on the altar of incense. Of course, he's, from the standpoint of his tribal identity, from the standpoint of his qualifications and things related to God's governance regarding the oversight of these things and the performance of these things, he's not qualified. He's not qualified. So we read that Azariah, the priest, went in after him with 80 priests of the Lord who were men of valor. And we've already read about some men of valor earlier, the military men. These were also men of valor. They had some spiritual backbone and integrity. They knew that this was wrong. They knew that Uzziah was not spiritually qualified to go into the temple and offer incense. And notice what it says happened here. They withstood King Uzziah and said to him, it is not for you, Uzziah. That is, it's not lawful for you to burn incense to the Lord, but for the priest, the sons of Aaron, these are the Levites, who are consecrated to burn incense. Go out of the sanctuary, for you have done wrong, and it will not bring you honor from the Lord. But how did Uzziah respond? Well, the way a lot of people do. He was proud, we read that, but the problem is his pride led him to anger, an emotional reaction. He became angry, but it says now he had a censer in his hand to burn incense, so he's well on the way to do this. And when he became angry with the priest, leprosy broke out on his forehead in the presence of the priest in the house of the Lord by the altar of incense. So that's not good. Azariah, the chief priest, and all the priests looked at him, and behold, he was leprous in all of his forehead, and they rushed him out quickly And he himself hurried to go out because the Lord had struck him. You know what you read about him here before you finish this chapter? That he was a leper to the day of his death and lived in a separate leper house. He was excluded from the house of the Lord, and he was replaced with Jotham, his son. Now, I wonder what Uzziah was thinking. And all. You know, here you have a man who's highly successful and obviously motivated, powerful. And this all went to his head. You know, he probably thinks, well, I'm smart enough to, you know, if it's good enough for me to build these special machines or have them built, at least be able to have it done. And these are great achievements and equipping the Judah militarily. All these successes. Why, what would be wrong with a guy like me going in and burning incense to the Lord? I think I'll do that too. What difference would it make? Do you think, though, that thought was in his mind? Obviously it was. What difference would it make whether the priest did it or I did it? Look at me. Look at who I am. This is an interesting story. Sometimes you see God directly intervening. Sometimes he intervenes through human agency. But in the miracle age, it's not exceptional to see God directly intervene. And he did on that occasion. He did on that occasion, and he directly, miraculously smote Uzziah with leprosy. But what difference did it make? I'll tell you what difference it made. God, in giving the instructions in the law regarding worship, instructed that this was a job, the burning of incense was a job for the priest. It was not a job for the king and someone of another tribe than Levi. So the difference is simply what God had said on it already. When you go back to the book of Exodus and elsewhere where these things are discussed, it's just a matter of what God said on it. And that's the thing, that seems to be the lesson that's hard for people to learn. I think of this sometimes today when I see people, this mentality, develop in sometimes preachers or so-called spiritual leaders. And they tend to operate, at least they give the appearance of operating as though they have some special entitlement, some special authority to do, you know, whatever they want to do. You absolutely see this with what's called the pastor system. The pastor system. And before I get into that, I want to give you an illustration of what I'm talking about with this mentality. And it's a little bit, it's kind of a New Testament parallel to the old Uzziah story. I thought of it when I thought of using Uzziah in 2 Chronicles 26. I thought of the example in Acts chapter 12. And what happened in Acts chapter 12? Well, it's the story of King Herod. Herod Agrippa 2 in Acts chapter 12, where you remember that there were some political connections and goings-on, and some things related to Tyre and Sidon. And you remember that Herod gave a speech. The old King James says an oracle, an oration was made by him. And here he is, he's set in his royal apparel. This is Acts 12, verse 21, if you're interested in reading that. Royal apparel. So here he is. He's in a kingly state. You can visualize this. Well, when he gave his speech, the people shouted and said, "It's the voice of God and not of a man." And given what we know about personal responsibility, one of the things that we can safely conclude about this is that God did not do what he was about to do here or about to read of to Herod merely because of what other people did. But obviously Herod accepted the praise and this level of adoration that was heaped upon him. He obviously accepted it. In other words, he's like, "Hey, yeah, good point, people." And what happened to him? immediately the angel of the Lord smote him because he gave not God the glory, and he was eaten of worms and gave up the ghost. There is no conflict. Some have tried to argue there's a conflict between this verse and what we know from secular history, that Herod's life dragged on for some days. It doesn't say here that the angel of the Lord immediately killed him, does it? There's perfect harmony between this and some of the secular accounts of what happened to Herod. Perfect harmony. Now what it says is the angel of the Lord immediately smote him, and it says he was eaten of worms and gave up the ghost. It doesn't say how long it took for him to give up the ghost. I've often wondered why people just assume and assert that there must be a contradiction here. No, there's no contradiction. He could have lived any number of days in this tremendously painful condition of being eaten by basically parasites, being eaten from the inside out. Now, I want you to look at what happened here. I wonder if Herod, because of his position, you know, these people praise him the way this is. They say this is more like God than a man. And he goes ahead and he accepts the honor, you know, and his head swells up. It's all fun and games until, you know, God smacks you with worms and you die. But I wonder if at some point he thought, you know, what difference would it make whether or not I go ahead and accept this honor? The people have given it to me. They're the ones honoring me with it. And every time I read the story, I think about the denominational pastor, and especially those who call themselves reverend. I think of that. Because think of the honor that people are putting upon a preacher to either unscripturally classify him as a pastor, I'm going to explain that more later, or give him the honor of the title reverend. How do you see the word reverend used in the Bible? Well, I'll tell you where I see it. I see it in Psalm chapter 111 in verse 9, where it says that God sent his redemption. He sent redemption to his people. He has commanded the covenant forever. Holy and reverend is his name. I see that. Where would you go in the Bible to find authority for calling a mere man, a preacher typically who's called this, reverend? Where would you go? Well, you're not going to find the verse. You're not going to find the authority for that because there's no such passage. There is no such passage. You know, I've talked to men before about this, denominational preachers who wear the title. I remember a discussion with one I had one time. It was a tense moment. And I said something to him about wearing the title reverend. And he said, "That's what the people call me." He said, "That's what the people call me." He said, "I don't really like it." And I said, "Good." I said, "Tell them not to, and they won't do it. Explain to them why they should not be doing that." Well, he didn't like that. He didn't like it when I said that. I said, "That's what I do. If somebody calls me reverend, I very politely explain to them why I am not reverend and why no preacher is reverend, but rather that God's name is reverend. I politely do it because I know people are mistaught by the millions on this. They are mistaught. They're led to believe that preachers are reverend." You know, that's sad. It's sad that so many people believe it's okay, because that tells me that too many preachers, people who call themselves preachers, too many preachers have led them and allowed them to believe that error. And it kind of reminds me of Herod and what happened to him. We need to be very careful about that. What did Jesus say in Matthew chapter 23 about the wearing of religious titles? Of religious titles. What did he say about it? Well, he talked about the Pharisees and he condemned them. And he said they love the uttermost rooms at feast and the chief seats in the synagogues. Verse 6. And what else do they love, Jesus? They love greetings in the markets to be called of men rabbi, rabbi. Okay, now what's going on here? Well, Jesus said, but be not called rabbi, for one is your master, even Christ, and all of you are brethren. Now, is it true in religion that the preacher would be actually equal to those to whom he preaches, those he teaches? Is he equal with them? Is he not just one of their brothers? Well, yes. There's no religious titles. No religious titles. Some people say, well, wait a minute now. Even you believe in elders or pastors in the sense of elders in the local church. Well, absolutely. We'll talk about that just here directly. I certainly do. But is the term pastor or the term elder or the term bishop a religious title? These are not titles. These are descriptions of the work. They are job descriptions. And we'll see that just here directly from Acts chapter 20. So people get that wrong. Jesus said, do not use religious titles. In fact, he said, call no one your father upon the earth, for one is your father which is in heaven. Neither be ye called masters, for one is your master, even Christ. Now, religious people have different titles. Sometimes I've noticed that those who receive a doctorate, it may be in theology and some type of religious studies, will like to call themselves doctor in a spiritual connection or in connection to their spiritual work. That's just as wrong. Even though it's not explicitly mentioned here, it's just as wrong, just as dangerous. Because you're being called of men by some religious, special religious term or title. And Jesus does not authorize that. The Bible condemns that. It actually, and we see we can't prove this with everyone. I wouldn't want to say that every man who is called reverend has a pride problem. But I will say that certainly there is a connection between the two, and a man who is willing to be called reverend might have a pride problem and often develops that. But the same is true with regard to how the word pastor is often used. People often call their preachers pastors, and people need to think about something on that. Pastors in the New Testament, pastors are elders. The terms are used interchangeably. They are twice used interchangeably. In Acts chapter 20, verses 17 and 28, and in 1 Peter chapter 5, in verses 1 through 3, they are used interchangeably. They are used of elders and or bishops. So you actually have three different terms. Overseers, you have elders, which suggests experience and wisdom, and maybe a little age, you know, relatively speaking, obviously, implied in that. But certainly wisdom and understanding of God's Word and how it applies and how it works, that's vital to it, integral to it. And then you have the word pastor, and what is he? What do you think of when you think of a shepherd? He's one who leads. He leads by instruction. He leads by example. And what do you think of when you think of a bishop, or the word is overseer? Well, you think of someone who takes the oversight, right? But these are terms that describe the function of an elder. These are not titles. These are not spiritual or religious titles for an elder. People need to be very, very careful about this. So one thing we need to learn is that when Paul called the elders of the church at Ephesus in Acts chapter 20 and verse 28, he actually called the overseers or pastors or shepherds. That's verse 28. You put those together and you can figure this out very, very quickly. If you read the rest of the passage where he addresses the elders, going down through about verse 32 or so, especially, you see him describe the function of the pastor, of the elder, of the bishop. He is to watch for the souls That's what Hebrews 13:17 says. He's to watch for the souls of the members of the local church. He's to lead them. He is to guide them. So this is not a special privilege or a title at all. Even when we're talking about scripturally qualified elders, we're not talking about that. Now, why did I say scripturally qualified elders in connection with the term pastor? Well, because some people think that merely because someone calls himself a preacher or claims to have been called miraculously somehow to preach, that upon that basis alone, he is a pastor. No. No, the New Testament is very clear about who can be a pastor. A pastor is an elder. A pastor is a bishop. These are interchangeable. So you have to go to the qualifications of the bishop or the elder, 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 7, and Titus chapter 1, verses 6 through 9, to find the qualifications for being a pastor. That's where you go for that. So, no, in our religion, it's just the preacher who, no, well, then that would be wrong. Then you're misusing the term. You're unscripturally applying the term. And it leads to a whole lot of confusion and trouble. By the way, if I were to think of the word, the inherent meaning of the word pastor, given the association with these other terms, divinely given, divinely taught and implied, then I might conclude that the pastor is the ringleader of the whole deal. That he's the boss of the church. I wonder how many people have been led to believe that the preacher is the superintendent of the church. That he's over the church. A lot of them. Millions of them have. I don't know how many people I've known who have concluded, who've been led to believe that the preacher, called a pastor, is the overseer of a local church. There is no one overseer in a local church. That concept's not authorized in the New Testament. There's no such thing as that. The New Testament always talks about a plurality of elders or pastors in the local church, of overseers in the local church. You can have one preacher, but you cannot have one pastor. That's the point. You can have one preacher, but you cannot have just one elder. Or one bishop, that is, one overseer. You can't have that. There's no scriptural authority for that. Every instance of elders is plural. In regard to the church, it is plural. That's what you see in Acts chapter 20, and the verse that I mentioned in verse 17. That's what you see in Acts chapter 14, in verse 23. They appointed elders in every church. It's always that way. It's always that way. That's the Bible pattern on that. And we need to respect that pattern. And there's wisdom in that pattern. One man rule is just always dangerous. It's always dangerous. And that's why God built these safeguards, guidelines for the oversight of a local church. He did that because he knows man. He knows the tendency of people to usurp, to become like the Diotrephes character of 3 John. And God has the safeguards in order to keep that from happening. You have a plurality of qualified men. By the way, you don't have one qualified elder and then two or three that are just working on their qualifications. No, if you have two or more qualified men, all of them qualified. You don't need one who is the supreme or chief bishop or chief elder and the others merely yes men. We need to avoid that. And as far as one man assuming too much power, we just read it, didn't we? We just read an example of it in 2 Chronicles 26, where King Uzziah just all of a sudden drifted into this mentality. It happens very quickly, very easily. And so we want to avoid that. These are some areas where people will say, what difference does it make about that, Tim? Well, we just have our one-man pastor-preacher system. Well, but the difference is it's unscriptural, and I gave you the passages on that. The difference is when it comes to the wearing of the title like reverend, Jesus said, don't do it. There's no authority for wearing religious titles. Matthew 23:7-10. Our time is up today. We thank you for listening. Hope you'll tune in next week for another study. Until then, we bid you a pleasant good day.